The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
You're listening to Uncovered with Bharat Sundaresan and Jared Kimber on the 99.94 Network.
We have a bunch. Let's start with India, Australia, just because that one finished a couple of minutes ago. And I saw more of that one. I will explain why I haven't seen much of New Zealand, Sri Lanka in a moment. But I think the most interesting thing for me on the India, Australia is that if you are Cameron Green or Shubman Gill, you have played an absolute blinder by missing the early part of this series when the pitches were at their worst. And they're going to end up with pretty good numbers. You could even add Travis Head because he missed one of those early test matches as well. Just on how different it is. And we see Virat Kohli make runs. And we see everyone make runs. And what's the difference? Pitch is not as spiteful. And I think that as someone who does a lot of work in this kind of field, and I know there's a few other people like me out there, we see this again and again and again, which is the conditions usually dictate how players go more than anything else. And we don't, it's not how we follow cricket, unfortunately. We look at it in a very different way. And, you know, from this particular point of view, if Shubman Gill and Cameron Green and Travis Head played in that other test, they would all have worse records now coming out of this series than they do. And that's how cricket is played. It's not a particularly big surprise that these things happen. It was actually a fairly disappointing test in the end. I thought there are times where it could have been set up to be quite exciting. I mean, say what you want for England and Bazball, but you know, the way that they play means that the games have the ability to be sped up. So there is more chance of an opportunity of a result. And this is kind of more of an old school pitch. I think we were all waiting for it to fall apart and speed up at the end, like the Indian wickets of old. Sadly, that didn't happen, and we've ended up with this. But, you know, from that perspective, it's a little bit disappointing, but it was a really interesting Border Gavaskar trophy, all things considered. That wasn't as much. And by that, I mean, it was interesting in that it wasn't particularly like other Border Gavaskar trophies. There wasn't as much nonsense. you know, all the sort of bullshitty bits that go around the edge didn't seem to happen as much as they normally do. And so, yeah, I did think it was different from that point of view. Obviously, the pitchers being so biased towards one part of the game certainly made it interesting. I think in some ways, if you go back to the Ashes in Australia last year, it was a similar kind of thing where, you know, the bowling was so on top at times that it becomes almost a survival series rather than anything else. But so from that point of view, I don't think it's going to go down as a classic Border Gavaskar. But even coming into the last match and still having Australia having a chance to get somewhere. And then on top of that, you know, beyond just Australia having a chance, you know, the whole World Test Championship thing. I mean, it's funny. It's not completely taken over the world, right? The World Test Championship. But you do see it affecting some of the narratives. You do see it affecting some of the way that teams are playing on the field. You know, it's there and thereabouts. You know, I don't know how popular it ever needs to be going ahead, but it's certainly something from a perspective of, what's the best way of putting it? It's certainly something that is given us some storylines, which we didn't have before. And realistically, these are important things, especially in modern sport. You know, the ability to have a strong narrative, the ability to have something to talk about that isn't, you know, some nonsense to do with the pitch or anything else. Or, you know, or two players are upset at each other, or, you know, one former captain doesn't like a current captain, or any of that sort of nonsense. It's much better to be able to talk about, well, this test match matters because Australia have a chance of drawing in India when no one had a chance of drawing in India. And more importantly, that will also mean that India will have given up the World Test Championship final. So I thought that was really fantastic from that point of view. Our Earth is the Best has sent through a message going, positives for Australia. Cameron Green, Todd Murphy and Travis said, look, I think the positives for Australia, it's not that those are not positives. I haven't come away from that thinking that Travis Head is much better than I thought before. As I said, there's a luck in the fact that the test matches that they played, but Head did very well. He also got that nice second innings knock in the third test, which was a handy one to play. I think most opening batters in the world would have been happy to go out and bat in that kind of a situation. Todd Murphy's a huge positive. Cameron Green, he made runs when he had to. I think he's bowling, certainly in situations like in India, has a way to go. But all things said, I think that's a very positive series for Australia. I think India might come out of that as well, rethinking what they do. It's really interesting how far they changed with that fourth test compared to the other tests. But I do think India might just come out of that, just rethinking some of the things within their game of how they do things, of what's the best way of putting it, but of... is just making the pitcher's rag the best option. You know, and I talked about the ridiculous three-man bowling attack that they might be able to use, and there are other things. But I think there are better ways that they can play going ahead, especially when they're playing the better teams. And that might only be Australia and England as we currently stand, although Sri Lanka are making a play of recent times for being very, very good. So there are some changes out there. But yeah, I think this test match was... a little bit dull, certainly fizzled out. But I thought it was the kind of test series that if it wasn't India and Australia, you'd be like, this is a good test series. But because it was India and Australia, you're waiting for brain fades and, you know, all the different things that Steve Smith does, I suppose. And we maybe, you know, sandwich gates and, you know, all these different things. And we maybe didn't get the level of nonsense that we normally get. But Australia coming back from 2-0 down when no one saw it, I think, all things considered, was a really, really good series. If you do have any questions, remember, if you want them absolutely guaranteed to be answered, please put what's it called? Super chat in. If not, you can put any questions you want in and I will get to them if and when I can. What else have I got here on this test match? Yeah, I think the most interesting thing was the pitch, obviously. The most interesting thing from a series perspective was the fact that Australia held up. I still think India is the better team all round at the moment, but, you know, test match in England might swing back into Australia's favour. I thought India played really good in England. What was that, 2 years ago now? Obviously, they got baseballed in last time they went over. That was a very different kind of England conditions than they're probably going to get. New Zealand, obviously, beat them in that other match as well. I would expect it to favour Australia slightly more than India, but I still think India's a really, really good team, and I've got no problems with them having a chance in the World Test Championship. And I'm excited for that game. I need press accreditation for that game as well. But yeah, really excited that it's coming up soon. I really like the World Test Championship. I think it's a fascinating match, fascinating idea. You know, one off in a neutral venue. I kind of think it should always be in a neutral venue, not always in England, of course, but I kind of think it should always be in a neutral venue. They should pick maybe a bunch of pitches around the world. You know, I don't know, Kandy, Dharamshala, maybe Cape Town, Adelaide Oval, you know, wickets that are not hugely favorable to one kind of cricket or another, where you probably need, you know, spinners and pace bowlers and batters are still going to have a chance, you know, whatever that may be, those sorts of pitches. I think there's some really interesting ones out there that they could pick. How much longer it lasts for, I don't know. But I think we had a really good World Test Championship the first time, other than the rain, partly because, you know, it gave New Zealand a chance to sort of crown their golden generation in a way that apparently they couldn't do in any limited overs cricket. And then this one is, again, the two biggest teams, probably the two best teams over the last little while, maybe over the last 3 or 4 years even now. So I thought that from that perspective, it was certainly pretty spectacular from that point of view. All right, I am going to have a quick break. I'll go and see if there's anything in the chat worth having a look at. But I have a quick break here, and then after the break, we will talk about New Zealand and Sri Lanka.
Nice buns, soft, fluffy, and ultra low net carbs. Discover Hero Bread, the delicious ultra low net carb bread with incredible taste and texture. Hero Bread has 0 grams of sugar and is under 100 calories per serving. Plus, high in fiber with 5 to 10 grams of protein per serving. Order from hero.co now and get 10% off your first purchase with promo code AH10. That's 10% off with code AH10. H-E-R-O.co.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Welcome back to Uncovered. Barrett is still being rested and rotated, and or I just haven't selected him. We'll never know. But it's just me again this week, and hopefully Barrett will be with us again very, very shortly. Yeah, so India, Australia, I think we can move on from that. I want to talk about a little bit about New Zealand, Sri Lanka. So I haven't seen the full thing. I've seen the highlights. Obviously, I was asleep when it happened, but I record every day of test play so I can go back in and watch them. Well, most days of test play, the ones that allow me to record them on my system. In fact, if you're someone who can record all cricket games in the world and have the ability to like upload it to a private service, I'm you know, more than willing to help subsidize your lifestyle, because there's a lot of stuff that I can't see. But I talked about, you know, getting a partnership with NV Play or someone else in the future, or Kadamba or whoever, so I can what's the other one? Sports Mechanics, I think they're called. So I can't wait to go back and watch that last session. But I want to talk about it in a more broad point of view. Obviously, I think now, even though they stole the game against, well, they stole this game against Sri Lanka, but also stole the game against England. I think we know that New Zealand as a team are on the slide, and we'll be doing, it's really interesting this, you know, as we come up to this World Test final and see them having to steal a game at home against Sri Lanka, how far they've gone from where they were before. They were a really, really incredible machine. Yeah, they had some favorable things go for them in the last World Test Championship, but they were also a much better team then than they are now. So it'll be really interesting to see how they go coming ahead, how far they fall, and everything else. The Sri Lanka story is maybe the more interesting one, although I think they're both interesting. We've got videos coming up on both of them that probably might be out during the next test. In fact, you know, I made that big claim that I thought Sri Lanka had the easiest World Test Championship schedule, but that they have played so poorly that I didn't think they would get anywhere. You're starting to watch them now and you're starting to think there's some of those batters are starting to come together. You know, I've always thought someone like Dhananjay De Silva, for instance, was a really good player, but he's the kind of player that you want when you have a good team because his use is limited. But at batting at number six and being able to bowl and obviously being a world-class fielder is a really, really good skill to have in a very good team. But at times he was batting out of position, too far up the order, too much was asked of him as a bowler. You're starting to see now that he's a good complementary piece to everything else that Sri Lanka has. And they've been really, really good. There's no doubt that their world test, even if they've not ended up in the final, but they have, they pushed it all the way. Yeah, and yes, they had an easier schedule that, you know, you won't find any arguments for me. I think they had the easiest schedule of any team by a distance. But the other side of looking at that is that they are still improving all the time. We've seen that in, you know, white ball cricket as well. There's something happening there. And I think we have to celebrate it because for a long time we didn't have it at all. I really thought they did very, very good in that series. But also, New Zealand cricket, I think it went through, you know, just get back to them for a moment. They went through a golden era, of course, of playing. But as good as they were in Test cricket, I still think there was, you know, this thought that Test cricket was, you know, fading over there. You know, it's become a boutique ground. How great is it for New Zealand to have two incredibly close Test matches? I mean, it's been a fantastic, I want to say summer. Is it technically summer in New Zealand at the moment? A fantastic late summer. In New Zealand so far. And I remember, this actually reminds me of a story of when we were making Death of a Gentleman. So if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix in some parts of the world and not in others, but it's the documentary I made about Test cricket. We were making it in 2012, I want to say, when we were in Sri Lanka. And Mike Atherton wrote a piece going, oh, so, you know, these two guys are making this film about the death of Test cricket, but we've had a couple of close matches. And, you know, the Test cricket isn't dying the same way. And he wrote this article and I sort of went to Athens and I said, do you think close Test matches is what's going to save this game? Because it's not, right? What they allow though, when you have two of them back to back in one country, is you actually have an energy that New Zealand cricket can build on now. They can use that in their marketing next year. They can, you know, that incredible come from behind draw in that series against England. You know, the Neil Wagner going out with busted hamstring and a bulging disc. If cricket, Test cricket was run properly, you could use these games. And you could say, look, T20 cricket, one day cricket, we're glad that you like that as well. And we know that there's going to be a lot of close finishes, but we also know you're not going to remember a lot of them. If you watch the end of this Test match, and from my Twitter feed, from my WhatsApp feed, from everyone I've talked to this morning who was awake when it happened or was watching it when it happened, it affected them. So did that Pakistan-England test a couple of months ago. So did New Zealand-England recently. So, you know, all these different matches really have, you know, they grab people. And I was trying to explain to my son recently that because in Test cricket we have so few close matches, when we do have one, it changes the way you feel. I remember I was commentating the New Zealand-England one. My legs were just jittering the whole way through. And I'm sure that's how a lot of people felt. I mean, so many Indian fans have contacted me, and I think there might have been someone in the group who said this earlier, that a Davil says, I preferred to watch New Zealand Sri Lanka today, and I was not disappointed. It was a thriller. Now, he got lucky that it was a thriller. But the point is that, you know, those sorts of matches, they do drag you in. You do end up having to watch them. And it's an amazing thing. But it doesn't mean anything in a vacuum because New Zealand cricket can't guarantee they're ever going to have a close Test match again, right? That's how Test cricket works. Well, I think we have more close finishes now than we ever have before, but it's not because Test cricket is absolutely brilliant. It's because we have more tests than ever before. So when you get that opportunity to have a great Test match, you have to start using that in your advertising and your marketing to say, you know, get Stephen Fry or get Peter Jackson or I'm trying to think of famous people from cricket countries around the world. You know, get Harry Potter. You know, all these different people, get them around to talk about how they felt when they watched these things. That's an ad, right? Imagine getting all five or six of the most famous people in England to talk about the Headingley test, right? Imagine getting a bunch of famous South Africans to talk about that South Africa-Sri Lanka game where they lost, or one of the ones where they won, right? All these different things. That's an easy ad to be able to put together. You know, the celebrities love doing those sorts of things, right? And then, or you do the recreations, all these different things in the marketing. Test cricket, here it is. And it's Jack Leach, you know, taking a single and the crowd cheering. It's a completely different kind of thing. And I think when you get a moment like this, you should take it. But the truth is that a close test match does not save test cricket, and it never has. And sadly, it never will. But what you can do is build on these things. And we are getting to a point, if you look at somewhere like New Zealand, they should be able to dine out on this, especially because they won both the games. They should be able to dine out on this for years, right? That's what is missing in test cricket. It's that energy. It's that oomph. It's not that the games aren't incredible. I mean, you know, I think most people who watch all three formats would understand that test cricket is a better thing. It does more to your body and your mind. And it can be duller than any of the other three formats, and it can be more exciting than any of the other three formats. And that's kind of the genius of it, that you have to stick with it. And that's how we have to start selling it. And as someone who hasn't even seen this last session yet, you know, outside of Neil Wagner hobbling in, I haven't even seen this last session, and I already know how exciting it is based on everything else. And I think that's what we need to build on. But I do think that the Sri Lanka Renaissance is a story that we should keep looking at. I think that was sort of overestimated a little bit in T20 cricket based on the two World Cups. I think I've done a pretty good breakdown to say that basically outside of losing to, was it Namibia, they've beaten all the teams they should have beaten and lost all the teams they should have lost to. But going back to what was happening in 2020, where it looked like the entire nation was combusting as a cricket team, you know, the women had some success in that last World Cup. Women weren't even allowed to play. They were suspending half their players from the men's team. You know, the coaching situation is ridiculous. If you commentate a game in Sri Lanka, you get offered a coaching position. Absolute nonsense from beginning to end. Really huge that I think they were involved in this particular game. So absolutely great from that perspective. And I'm just, anytime someone likes a test match, I just, you know, I think it's a really exciting thing, right? Let's move on to England, Bangladesh, or Bangladesh, England. So, I mean, it's a weird little series, but there's a couple of younger and slightly less young players that I just wanted to talk about. Rehan Ahmed's really, really interesting. I'm not a huge technical person when it comes to cricket. I can talk with technical people, but I know there are people that know a lot more about that sort of stuff. But one of the few things I do know a lot about is the biomechanics of leg spin. And Rehan Ahmed's really interesting because he's one of these new leg spinners that doesn't have a very strong front arm. And I think over a long period of time, that causes a problem because you can't regulate your length as well. And I think we've already seen him overpitch and underpitch a little bit in international cricket, and he's had some success and he certainly looked good at times. But because that left arm is not strong when he comes over, I do wonder if he has the ability to consistently land the ball. And he's also, because he doesn't have a strong left arm, it means that he's wrong and is his main delivery at the moment. Now, I think we've seen with Bishnoi that you could do that, but I just think Bishnoi's action is a little bit stronger. But if you remember, one of the reasons that Bishnoi struggled to get into the team was because they were worried about his biomechanics early on as well. So we're seeing this new breed of leg spinner who can basically bowl a leg spinner or a wrongen that maybe is a little bit unpredictable with their lengths, that is quite good and set up for T20 cricket. The interesting thing will be how they will go in one day cricket and then also test cricket as well if they continue with that same path, because generally, if you look at the history of test cricket, what you see is that leg spinners are very, very strong with that front arm, which allows them to pull through the line, which allows them to land the ball in whatever length they want. And that's the way of going forward. So just worth looking at for Rehan Ahmed. I'm a huge Najmal Shanto fan. Beforehand, other than never seeing him make any runs, which to be fair was most people who watched international cricket, I didn't really have many views on him, but I really like him for a few different ways. I think he's an excellent fielder. I've seen him take some very good slip catches, but he's also a good mover outside of that. He can bat. I want to see him tested more and more, but I thought England's a good team to go up against because they're very good at doing analysis. So you saw that with Rony Talukdar, you know, senior player comes back in, they tell him to biff it. First game, he catches England by surprise. They don't know what to do. Next game, all they do is bowl slower balls to him. they're very clever, you know, and they would have, it would have been a team of people, you know, bowling coaches, maybe bowlers themselves, analysts, all going through the footage, looking at everything they could to try and work out a better way to bowl to him. Shanto, his form held up all the, has held up all the way through that series so far. I don't think he's ever going to be a great T20 player. I could be wrong, but I don't think he has that kind of explosiveness to his game. But I do think in one day cricket and test cricket, more I've watched him in the series, the more I really like him. He's also willing to bowl part-time off spin as well. It's got the feeling of a cricketer who's 24, who maybe now believes in himself in a way that he was probably picked on talent beforehand. But he's absolutely fascinating. I was going to say I'd get Mohammad Issam to come on and do a podcast on him, but Mohammad Issam probably wants to come in and flog his book. So I'll do two podcasts with Mohammad Issam. Who's the fourth player? The third player I wanted to talk about was Mahidi Hasan. I'm finding him really, really interesting. So he batted at number 5 in the last game. Now, part of that was because of the matchups, right hand, left hand. And also, I think they wanted to move Shakib down the order. You know, when Mahidi Hasan started international cricket, I don't ever want to say he was a genuine, you know, number 10 or anything like that, but he was certainly a lower order player. And we've seen this a lot with young players who come in when they're very, very young. And I'm trying to remember, what is he, 25 now? And so he started when he was 18. Does that sound right? I think that's right. And if you just look at his batting, I'm just going to try and bring up his entire batting international situation. When he was 18, obviously that part of his game was not particularly that developed. And so you could see that he starts off as a tail ender. Now, we know he made the 100, not out. So he's batted, when he started off, he batted at number 10, then he had a little bit at number 9. He's obviously moved up to number 8. As I said, we've now seen him. He's opened before. In fact, in international cricket, I'm just looking at this. This is live breaking news. He's batted 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have to get him batting 11 at one stage. We have to get him bat at number 4 for him to bat the full card, the Wilfred Rhodes, if you will. But I think what you're seeing here is very similar to what you saw with maybe someone like Dan Vettori. Less so with Jadeja, of course, because we knew that Jadeja was an all-rounder by the time he made international cricket. But someone like Dan Vettori, where there was always a slither of batting talent. But when you come in so young, you haven't had time to develop your batting. Mahidi Hasan is really interesting. Him and Sam Curran both batted up the order in this series, and they both had the same basic problems, which is some of the running between wickets was a little bit tail end, which, you know, Sam Curran missed out on, almost ran himself out at one stage because he didn't run the first one hard. We saw with Mahidi Hasan, he spent half of his time being told that he was running incorrectly in that last T20 that they won. And both of them, but more importantly from a batting perspective, is both of them don't understand how to rotate strike. So they can hit, but there's a lot of dot balls in between that hitting. But I think with both of them, there is a big chance if you can keep them up the order and you can get them those sorts of skills going ahead, and they're going to have to learn them in international cricket, they can be really interesting players. So also, Mahidi Hasan wasn't picked in the first T20, and I don't know if he was injured or not, but I don't remember him being injured against a team of completely left-handers. Which is absolutely bizarre, but I thought he bowled beautifully the other night. But yeah, so that is that's all I've got from the games that I saw this weekend. Oh, there was also West Indies, South Africa. Sorry, I mean, I didn't see too much of that one just because of how busy I've been. But Temba Bavuma making 100. I had kind of a funny thought when it came to Temba Bavuma and his 100. So Temba Bavuma, right, has basically been having a great test average. Well, no one else has, like mid to high 40s. Doesn't sound great, but by modern cricket standards, you know, build him a castle. And he's been doing it by basically being not out and making 30 to 40 minimum almost every innings he comes across, right? Now he makes the big 100, and I'm wondering if he'll actually find a way to drop his average because it was so absolutely bizarre that he managed to keep that average for so high for so long. But yeah, I love Temba Bavuma. I love the professionalism he has. I love the way he thinks about cricket. You know, I wouldn't have him as my T20 captain or in many of my T20 teams, but I'm a big fan of the way he goes about it. So I thought that was really good. Again, you know, West Indies at times were in and around in that game and didn't end up. Keshav Maharaj, I've actually got a video that will come out probably later this week on him, on his career as much as anything, but also on the injury that he's done. So I won't go too much into that, but that, as someone who once hurt his Achilles, nowhere near on the level that he did, it's a really tricky injury, and I wish him the absolute best. I would say at this stage, he's about a 50% chance of playing in the World Cup, depending on everything that comes afterwards. But let me, I think we've got some super chats and some other chats. And we will get to those, but I've got some good ones coming through. Will Cooling has. If a miracle happens and we get a proper seven-team test Premier League with standardized match weeks, would you ever be able to leave the house asleep? Yeah, it'd be pretty bad. I've said this before. I think I'm already at a point where I need to form a partnership with one of these companies like MV Play, Canamba, Sports Mechanics, whoever it may be, because I can't watch the amount of cricket that I want. I thought we'd love to go back and watch every ball of Temba Bavuma's innings, have a look at how West Indies got it wrong. Did the ball get soft? Did they bowl the wrong lines? Was he just really good? Was the pitch flattened out? Whatever. And chances are that now I'm going to have to catch up on this New Zealand-Sri Lanka game. And I'm not sure if I recorded the other one. I'm not sure. I've got an automatic record on, but I'm not sure if it records every single test match. And it's just tough. So yeah, if we ever did it properly, but I'd kind of love that as well. This has been one of the toughest months of, well, 2 months of my life for covering cricket. And part of it is the new YouTube thing. I mean, I'm really thankful to Cheyenne, who's come on and does a lot of writing for me as well. And, you know, we've got the Ravi Jadeja video that might even be live by the end of this. It might even already be up now. So people have probably disappeared to go watch that. But it's about Ravi Jadeja and whether he's an MVP, most valuable player in Test cricket at the moment. I couldn't have done that without Cheyenne. So, you know, we're getting to the point where I'm already having to get other people involved. And he's obviously brilliant. And it's great to be able to work with him going forward. And Muku is very good at putting together some of the videos where I just sort of say, I've written this, can you make it look pretty? But yeah, if we did have a proper 17 Test Premier League, the other thing is, well, if we had a proper 17 Test Premier League, let's be honest, I would probably try and cover both first division, second division, and probably third division. So I'd be absolutely ruining my life. But what a way to go.
Not all bread is created equal. And if you like your soft, fluffy, moist, and delicious, then Hero Bread and Buns should be your first choice. But Hero Bread isn't just about taste and texture. It's high in fiber with ultra-low net carbs with 0 grams of sugar. Order today at hero.co and use the code AH10 to get 10% off your first purchase. That's AH10 at hero.co, H-E-R-O.co, for 10% off your first purchase.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
So you're listening to Uncovered, Jared Kimber and Barrett Sundaresan. And by that, I mean Jared Kimber, because there is no Barrett Sundaresan. And let us get on to T20 Geek's question, who says, the three greatest spinners of all time, Yearly, Warne and Kumble, were all contemporaries. Is that just a coincidence? I don't think they are the three greatest spinners of all time. So I think they're all probably top 10. You could say the same thing of Bill O'Reilly, Clary Grimmett, and the English spinner who passed away in the war, whose name is completely dropped out of my head. We certainly see eras where there are more spinners and when they sort of come in a clump like that. I mean, Murali and Warner probably very close to one or two. I think that's very fair. But Kumble's probably a little bit further down the order than the other guys. And there's been some brilliant spinners. But they do seem to clump together. And I would say that is conditions-based more often than not, would be my guess. But I don't have a great answer for why we had. I don't have a great answer for why we had very good spinners in the 1930s, very good spinners in the 1950s and 60s, and very good spinners in the 90s, 2000s, and very good spinners in the 2015 onwards. I don't have a great answer to why it comes in that kind of pattern, but it does. And so maybe there is something to your question, but I don't think I have anything specifically great to add to that off the top of my head. I can't think of any reason. Pranav says, what do you make of Barrett's wicketkeeping? I thought he came with a better reputation than he actually performed. Carey was better wicketkeeper in the series. Can India give KL Rahul the gloves in the World Test? No, certainly don't give him the gloves. The thing with that you need to understand about wicketkeeping, it's exactly the same as batting and bowling, and we never think about it this way. Let's say KS Barrett is a better wicketkeeper than Alex Carey, right? That doesn't mean that Alex Carey can't be a better wicketkeeper in one series than KS Barrett. And the reason is the form still plays a part. How you see the ball still plays a part. How you're moving, any injuries that you have still play a part. And we never think about that in wicketkeeping. Anytime a specialist wicketkeeper is picked now, if they make one mistake, everyone's like, I might as well just pick a batter, right? That's not how it works. If form plays as much a part, I mean, form plays a part in umpiring and writing about cricket and everything else. It also plays a part in wicketkeeping. And so I don't think you can look at one particular series and say that he's not a good wicketkeeper now. I'm not sure I thought Alex Carey was better than him, but I think you're fair to say that they're in the same sort of situation. I thought he shaped up quite well, though, and moved his feet very well. I'm more looking at that than anything else. And I didn't see any technical flaws in the way. You know, I watched Litton Das wicketkeep yesterday, and, you know, he fell over taking a ball that was a fairly standard one. And, you know, these things happen. Tom Blundell, who I think has the best catch-drop ratio in world cricket, usually the non-Western keepers do because they're not up at the stumps as much. But certainly he's been the dominant wicketkeeper since BJ Watling retired as far as how he's gone. He dropped an absolute sitter in that New Zealand England series. You know, it's as a great batter can play a bad shot. Virat Kohli didn't make runs for a while. All these things happen, right? Pat Cummins bowling maybe hasn't looked quite as good over recent times as it had in the period before. That's going to happen to wicketkeepers as well. And I don't think we factor that in when we're thinking about them. Archit says, will Cam Green reach Ben Stokes' level of greatness by the end of this decade? He could be a better player than Ben Stokes. I say this based on the fact that I think if Cam Green reaches his potential, he should be able to, his full potential of what I think he could do. He should be able to average low 40s with the bat and average low 30s to mid 30s with the ball, which is probably a better player than Ben Stokes. He may not be the big game moment Stokes, and he may not, you know, change games and do all the sorts of other little things. But if you're looking purely statistically, Ben Stokes' numbers aren't that unattainable for someone of Cameron Green's talent. You know, Ravi Jadeja's numbers are much better, you know, than that. And I think Cameron Green has come into Test cricket as a better batter than Jadeja or Stokes did. Jadeja was clearly the best bowler of the three when he came in, and obviously relied on his bowling for a long time. Stokes' bowling is good, but I think, again, because of Green's pace and bounce, I think he has the ability to be an even better bowler than Stokes. Although I think Stokes' bowling will be underrated, because if you have a look outside of Neil Wagner, he's probably been the best partnership breaker of any, certainly of any seamer, but I think that might be of any bowler in Test cricket over the last long period of time. So there is a bump that Stokes gets that you don't necessarily get from in that sort of way. There's also the personality thing, which from a team perspective is probably far more important. You know, the whole idea that we could throw Ben Stokes at anything. But if you're looking at purely on a numbers point of view, if Cameron White was to continue to develop his batting and his bowling, he finds a good length eventually and just works out how to hit that length over and over again, he could be a better player than Ben Stokes. But there aren't that many players who've been better players than Ben Stokes. So injury, loss of form. I still have problems with bowling full in at the stumps to Cameron Green. I don't think his technique is perfectly set up for Test cricket at the moment. But we saw there are parts of Ben Stokes' career, like the fact that he still plays across the line to off spinners and stuff, where he's not completely set up perfectly for Test cricket, when especially in the DRS era against spinners. So from that perspective, I think Cameron Green, he's got a lot to overcome. But if you are someone who saw Ben Stokes when he was young and thought he could be anything, I think that Cameron Green could be a better player, certainly on paper, than Ben Stokes. But you know, a million things could happen between now and then. And, you know, he may not end up being any of those things. He may not be able to bowl consistently, you know, which is the biggest issue, you know, for his impact as an all-rounder. Amwesh says, what do you think about the pace attacks of Sri Lanka and Bangladesh? Rajitha, Asitha and Kumara and Chimiro in fit. And Tuscan, Ebadot, Shorafol for Bangladesh. You're missing someone, aren't you? Who, the new guy, someone else asked. Hassan Mahmood as well. Let's get some Hassan Mahmood love in there. Yeah, I think I said that Sri Lanka, during the T20, that you could start to see that there was a bowling attack forming for Sri Lanka that looked impressive. Well, we know that none of them were fit, but the fact that their third and fourth seamers were coming in and you were like, well, third and fourth choice seamers were coming in and you were like, these guys can bowl. It certainly looks very different than we saw before. Suddenly Sri Lanka looks like there's a lot of seam options available to them. Bangladesh is interesting. Taskin has clearly taken a step forward. Ebadot took those wickets in New Zealand. I still think he's got more development in him. He's 29, but he just looks like someone who has not played a lot of cricket. But he's tall, he's fast, he's fit. I really like him. Shorafol, yeah. I don't think it's as deep as the Sri Lankan lineup. I think Sri Lanka have a few more. But I do like Hassan Mahmood as well. You know, Ben Affleck, Hare, Leon Livingston bowling in the middle overs. What's not to like there? So individually, I don't think there's that many outstanding bowlers in that crop that you're talking about. But because they all have four or five options, backups, other players seem to be coming through the system faster than they have been before. It's not like I'm sitting there going, they have one great bowler. I think why I really like it is that there is a bunch of bowlers available to them and they have the ability to, I mean, Bangladesh, you didn't even put the fizz in there, by the way. Bangladesh have, you know, really only ever had the fizz as a frontline seamer and whatever was left of, you know, Murtaza's knees. They now have a platoon and Sri Lanka now have a platoon and Sri Lanka hasn't had probably this kind of fast bowling depth in a long time. They've certainly had better fast bowlers than this, but I'm not sure they've had this kind of fast bowling depth. And I think that's what's really interesting about all of that sort of stuff. Yuvashant says, why does Matthews struggle to make runs in Australia and South Africa, but has a great record in England and New Zealand? Well, they're very different places. I was having this discussion with someone recently that I think people think all center wickets are the same. I mean, the way that even all Asian wickets aren't really the same, right? Like Sri Lanka spins the most and the fastest. And, you know, Bangladesh and UAE keep very, very low. India, traditionally better for batting. And obviously Pakistan, it's almost like a different kind of Asian wicket, Pakistan, to all the others that we've just said. They're all very different. And it's exactly the same. You know, New Zealand and England wickets are very, very different than Australia and South Africa wickets. And the bounce, the consistency of bounce, you know, I would say that South Africa has some wickets that are like Australia, some wickets that are like England, and some wickets that are like New Zealand. Very, very different. Whereas Australia just has Australian wickets, and there's nowhere else in the world where the bounce is as vertical as it is in Australia. South Africa have some wickets that has good pace and carry. They don't have that sort of vertical bounce that you can get in Australia. Like even wickets like the Gabarin, you know, the MCG, which, and even Adelaide Oval can be like this sometimes, you get really steep bounce on those wickets. That's really hard to play if you, you know, if you're not from it. Whereas England is obviously more traditional seamers. New Zealand used to be seamers but can sometimes be a little bit slow seamers. And then, as I said, South Africa is a combination of almost all three of those. So they're all very, very different. I'm assuming it would be the pace and the bounce if it's a thing with Matthews. I haven't looked at his full record, so... I'm not sure. It could just be dumb luck as well. But if that is the case and you're right, then pace and bounce would be the most obvious answer to that. Pranav says, do you think that deciding the World Test Championship final venues beforehand is not a good thing? Instead, they should decide on the venue after the finalists are decided. Yeah, I mean, the reason they don't do that is it takes a long time to prepare for grounds crews, you know, cameras, production companies, all that sort of stuff. You know, organizing a test match at the last minute doesn't really make any sense. So that's the reason that that doesn't happen. I think there was another question, which I somehow managed to lose, where again, the reason that England is having them basically is England want them is the main reason. Other countries don't really see them as an advantage. The other thing is the ICC sees England at the moment as a place where neutral fans will turn up to matches. That's not particularly the case in other places, and that's certainly what their local boards are saying. I think a bit it will eventually move beyond England, but don't forget there's a long period of time where every ICC event was hosted in India, Australia, and England. It's not an accident. Charlie asks, do you think a part of the reason why the wobble balls replace swing bowling in Test cricket is that it makes swing harder to bowl by potentially scuffing up the shiny side of the ball? It's taken reverse swing away, Charlie. So the combination of the new regulations when it comes to, you know, saliva on the ball certainly seems to have played a part. But yeah, they're trying to keep the ball in a different way. So what we really saw in the wobble ball era is we're seeing more traditional swing and less reverse swing, because the wobble ball actually means you have to keep the ball in pretty good condition. But what you can't do is just slam it into the ground over and over again. The seam doesn't really matter as much in reverse swing, whereas it does obviously for the wobble ball. So I think that's the biggest change with those things. Ranjit says, Death of a Gentleman is available in DocuVerse YouTube channel. It is. I should have I'll put a link out to that before, but I don't know if they paid for the rights, just because I'm not a producer, so I don't know all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it exists online if you want to see it on YouTube. Anvit says, there's a lot of analysis on batting and bowling, but I rarely see analysis on ideal field settings. Besides, why aren't there any artificially intelligent field setting system? Well, this is a very easy one to answer, and it's basically because we don't track field settings. We don't track where the fielders are. That's why we don't have it. It's very silly. It's an obvious thing that certainly needs to change very soon. Should have already happened. We should have spatial tracking cameras ahead, on top of the grounds. But we haven't got to that point at the moment, Envit. And because of that, we don't have it. But yeah, I remember there's a article I did with Nathan Lehman a while back, the England analyst, and we were talking about what wagon wheels are. And wagon wheels are really cool, and it's great that we've had them for like hundreds of years. And if baseball had tracked wagon wheels more, I think they would have realized that you do need to move the fielders a lot earlier. So by having wagon wheels, it certainly has affected where fielders go. But wagon wheels are essentially telling you, especially in Test cricket, a little bit in T20 cricket and one day cricket as well, but certainly in Test cricket, where the fielders were not. Right? That's essentially what it's saying is, oh, look, he's hit all these cover drives. Well, that's because they left cover open. Because if they had a cover fielder there, he would not have been able to play that shot and that particular angle. So I think this is for me one of the big ones that you certainly want to. It really annoys me. So I talked to an IPL team and I said to them, if you set a camera up, if you in a bunch of local leagues even, and by local leagues, I mean, you know, like the SMAT or the Karnataka or, you know, whatever, the Tamil Nadu league. You set a bunch of cameras up, especially during lockdown. You could actually fast track your knowledge of where we're getting things wrong with fields and where we're not getting things wrong with fields. I've talked to the Big Bash teams about similar sorts of things. I think they all agree with me. It's just that no one is invested in any of these. And the bigger problem is that if you're a basketball team or a Premier League team, you play half your games at home. And you have that ability. Because in cricket, we move the venues all the time. Whether you can, I don't know what the financial cost of moving the spatial tracking cameras or whatever sort of cameras they end up using to be able to do this is. But yeah, and I think Hawkeye have this sort of technology already because I think it's something that they're bringing in for the basketball teams. And obviously baseball already does this. And the technology exists. There's money. It's available out there, but no one's done it yet. But I find it very, very annoying and I wish someone would have done something better with it. But unfortunately, at the moment, it's not to be. Anyway, big thanks to everyone for coming on Uncovered. We have a bunch of stuff lined up over the next week or so. There's already a couple of videos made. As I said, a Ravi Jadeja MVP one. Got some really good Red Incas coming out. There's an episode I just did with the Naan Curry podcast that you'll be able to hear on Red Inca, which is all about food and cricket. Which is, if you like food and you like cricket, it's a good place to go. And so then, but there's a bunch of other stuff that's coming out. As I said, I've done something on Keshav Maharaj and the ruptured Achilles tendon and everything else. But thanks for supporting us. I've got my Bodyline t-shirt on, and this one happens to be about Bodyline as well. So double Bodyline. So go and support Bodyline t-shirts and everything else. Get yourself Manscaped. And if you support us via Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, everything goes towards us making more content. That's basically how this thing works. So if you like what we're doing, subscribe, press the bell icon, share the content, tell your next door neighbor what we're doing, buy a Bodyline t-shirt, shave your nuts, whatever you need to do. We'll see you next week on Uncovered with Jared Kimber and Barrett Sundaresan, if he comes. We'll see you then. This show has an ad-free version via Patreon, and there are many other extras available there as well. There is a link to the show notes. The show is hosted by me, Jared Kimber. Barrett Sundaresan is my co-host. It is produced by Nick McCorriston. We also have a great production team from 42 with Rati Joshi on socials, Orajoti Senapayi, and Maida Akam producing podcasts, and Mukunda Bandreddy is the head of our YouTube account.
Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.